Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I'm pleased to bring to you the second and third Mishnah in the first chapter of Baba Metzia for OU's Mishnah Yomit or Mishnah Yomit program. In Mishnah Bet, whenever a Mishnah comes around and describes a case that is essentially indistinguishable, both in principles as well as in the legal ruling from the previous Mishnah or from the previous case in the same Mishnah, the assumption is that there must be something in the Mishnah which is new, which is being introduced. Otherwise, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi would not have given a case which essentially teaches nothing new over the previous case or the previous Mishnah. Something, therefore, in the conditions of the case or in the facts of the case must distinguish it from that which came before. So here in the second Mishnah, which reads, Hayu shnayim rochvim al gabi behema, shahaya echad rochev ve'echad manhig, zeh omer kula sheli ve'zeh omer kula sheli, zeh yishava she'en lo pachot michetzia, ve'zeh yishava she'en lo pachot michetzia, v'yachaloku. So there's a case where two people are riding on a domesticated animal. The assumption, of course, is that the animal is ownerless. That is, it can be acquired. Or in the language of the Mishnah, it's hefker. So that either two people have jumped on the animal to ride it, or one person was riding it and the other person had grabbed the reins to lead it. And one of them says, it's all mine, and the other one says, it's all mine. So in that case, each one swears that he owns no less than 50% of the animal. That is essentially saying, I got there first, I have the right to the animal, but since they can't get the full 100%, they swear that they own no less than 50%, and they split it 50-50. More likely, instead of splitting, obviously, the animal 50-50, unless they could eat it, is that they sell the animal and they split the proceeds. So the question is, in what way is this different from the Talit case that we saw in the first Mishnah? Essentially, you have two people claiming that they got there first to own something which was in the public domain, something which was not owned, and the ruling seems to be the same. They both swear that they got there first, essentially. They have no less than 50, and they split the difference. So if we look at the case, the biggest difference seems to be in the fact that it's an animal being acquired, which in turn will create a distinction in the process of possession and thus the claim of ownership. Don't forget that possession in Judaism is 10/10 of the law. So the question is, how does one make a possession? How does one gain control or gain ownership of an animal? Now, we learn in the fourth Mishnah of the chapter of Kiddushin that an animal to be purchased must be moved in some way to take ownership. For a large animal, one pulls on the reins, and for a small animal, one lifts it up, or also does mashiach, or pulls it along. So the scenario is this. One guy jumps on the back, in our Mishnah, the one guy jumps on the back of a previously unknown animal, and the other starts pulling on the reins, each one claiming it's mine. Now, as I said in the previous shiur, in the first Mishnah, we should assume that both people are being honest, that they believe that they got there first. There's no reason to assume dishonesty in this case. So what the Mishnah is adding over the previous case, its innovation, is that one might assume that leading the animal allows ownership to be made, because that is the classic pulling of the animal or grabbing the animal's reins, either what's called mesira or hagba or mashicha, whereas simply riding on the animal, just jumping on the back of the animal, does not confer ownership. But the Mishnah is teaching us that that is not true. In fact, riding on the animal does in fact grant ownership, and therefore both people have theoretical rights depending on who got there first. Both people think they're telling the truth, and ultimately they'll wind up to swearing to and splitting 50-50. Now, what's interesting here is that, now, without going into too many details of the Gemara's discussion, because again, this is a Mishnah shir, not a Gemara shir, the sense is that the rider who's sitting on the animal is not passively sitting in the animal, that he's goading the animal, he's yelling giddy up or something and smacking the sides of the animal with his feet. He's doing something to convey the fact that he has ownership. So too, if two people get on together, the assumption is that they're not just sitting there passively, but they're in fact trying to make it go. And in that case, that since each one is claiming to have done it at the same time, therefore the same rules that apply to the Talit, where we had two people with equal claims of ownership, and nobody either with zero possession or with equal possession, therefore we require them to sort of split it down the middle. The Mishnah continues, Bizman Shehim Modim, Oshieshlehem Edim, Cholkim Beloshwa, which literally means if all the parties admit, it doesn't say what they're admitting to, or that there were witnesses, and it doesn't say what the witnesses were witnessing, they divide it, but without the swearing in, the taking of the oath. This obviously applies not only to this Mishnah, the animal case, but to the Tali case as well. But as I said, it's not clear from the Mishnah what they're admitting to or what the witnesses are bearing witness to. And because it changes the ruling and one no longer requires taking an oath, a swearing in, they just split it without the swearing in. It's important to understand what it is they're either admitting to or the witnesses are seeing. So one possibility is that they both admit, or that the witnesses testify, that they both picked it up at the same time, at exactly the same time. And while this is a possibility, the question is, why does the Mishnah have to then state that the two parties don't have to take an oath, that they don't have to swear to God that they own 50% of the 50, no less than 50%? You could force them to swear, but they've already admitted that the other person has an equal claim by saying, oh, the other guy picked it up the exact same second. So essentially they're admitting that they have equal claims. So why would the Mishnah have to come to negate the requirement to take an oath when it's clear if the person already admitted that the other person got there the exact same second? Another possibility is offered by Maimonides, by the Rambam in his Perush L'Mishnayot, in his exegesis in his commentary on the Mishnayot. And what Maimonides says, what the Rambam says, is that it's not that they admit they both got there at the same time. They admit that they were formerly partners, that they used to be 50%, 50-50 dual owners of the same item. But now each one is claiming to have subsequently acquired the other 50% from the other person, either as a gift or as a purchase. So each one says, yes, I owned it 50-50 with this guy. We both had it, we both possessed it, but he sold me or granted me the other 50%. So, how does that explain why a vow or why an oath would not, why swearing it would no longer be necessary? So the Rambam explains like this. He says, the whole oath-taking ceremony, the swearing in God's name regarding one's ownership, was created in order to discourage people from making grabs, from making wild grabs for things that someone else is holding. That is, somebody else is holding a talit. He's got 100% possession and therefore 100% ownership, but nobody's around looking yet, so I'm going to jump in there and I'm going to grab it. So the rabbis made a takana, they made a fix, and they said, listen, we're going to force both of them to swear because people are not happy. They're very trepidant about swearing in God's name. That will keep people from like making mad dashes at other people's property, or even possibly, although the Rambam does say so, at unknown property. That is, in a case where it might wind up that there's dispute over the ownership. But what the Rambam says, that here the item was originally owned by both. So in the case where the rabbis made the takana, the person had 0% ownership and he was trying to get up to 50% ownership. But in this case, what they're admitting is, I had 50% ownership and they're just trying to get up to 100% ownership. So since the rabbis didn't feel that was such a likely case, because why would a person already owns 50% of it try to kind of lie his way or sneak his way or power his way to more? Therefore, the rabbis did not require this process of swearing in God's name in order to keep a person from doing that. That is, if a person had 0% ownership, the rabbis wanted to make sure they didn't make any mad grabs. But if a person admits to having 50% ownership, there's no reason to swear, because it's not likely that a person is going to, I guess, be so greedy as to own 50% and then try to bully his way into the 100%. Mishnah Gimel continues on the idea of taking possession, but the situation is now changing quite a bit from the first two Mishnayot. Haya rochev al gabe behema v'ra'a et ha-metziyah. So the third Mishnah reads that the case is, there's a single guy riding on an animal, and now the animal in question is not an animal that is trying to be acquired like in the previous Mishnah. We'll see that the purpose, the reason why it's mentioning this guy is not an animal is because he sees the unowned item on the ground and he doesn't want to get off the animal in order to get to the ground. So what does he do? V'amar l'chaveru t'nehali. So he says to his friend who's on the ground level, who's walking, I guess, next to the animal, front of the animal, standing on the side of the street, whatever it is, he says, would you go and give it to me? T'nehali, give it to me. So what happens? Natla v'amar ani zachiti zachaba. So if the friend, the guy that was on the ground, takes it, and rather than giving it to the guy who wants it, the guy on the animal, he keeps it for himself and says, I take possession over it. It's now mine. So the ruling is pickers, uppers are keepers, if that makes sense. That is, the guy who picked it up and kept it to himself is the keeper, even though the other guy had sent, had said to the guy, go get it, and give it to me. And the one who did so, the guy who said, go give it to me, the guy who's riding on his horse, is out of luck. Now, the simple sense is that the requester said that had the requester say, the person who's sitting on the horse, the donkey, whatever it is, had he said, take possession of it for me, that is, instead of saying, tenehali, give it to me, but zechali, go and take possession of it for me, then as soon as the person on the ground picked it up, it would have immediately become the requester's, even though it was still in the hand of the picker-up guys. The man of the who picked it up cannot take possession of it. In fact, the Gemara then says, not only is this true, but it takes it one step further. The only reason that the person who picked it up takes possession of it is because when the person on the donkey or the horse, whatever it was, said, give it to me, instead of using the words zechabi, go take possession of it for me, those words, give it to me, indicate that he specifically did not want to take possession. The implication of the Gemara is that if he was silent, then he would still have taken possession, if it was less clear. But by saying to Nehali, he was sort of saying, I don't want it for my personal possession, I just want to look at it and see how pretty it is. Now, the Mishnah continues on to alter the case a little bit. Im mishenatnalo, that is when the guy said, give it to me, and the guy on the horse says, give it to me. The guy on the ground picks it up, and he hands it over first to the guy who asked, who requested it. Im mishenatnalo, amar, ani zachiti ba, tchila, lo amar klom. If the one who picked it up says, I have taken possession of this item only after he had already handed over to the requester who was sitting on the animal, then his words, lo amar klum, have no meaning. That is, he does not get ownership, and ownership goes to the guy on the animal, even though he only said t'nehali. And Rashi explains the reason why. Because either way, the guy on the ground can't take possession. Why? If the guy on the ground had intended to take possession, that is, the guy on the horse never used the words for possession. He just said t'nehali, give it to me. So the guy on the ground doesn't say anything until he hands it over. So if his unstated intention, the guy on the ground, was to really take possession, well, that's fine. But when he gave it to the man who asked for it, it has to be understood as a gift. That is, the guy on the ground took possession, and then he gifted it over to the guy on the donkey. And if he didn't pick it up with the intention to take ownership, that is, if his silence means, I do not want to take ownership, then as soon as he gives it to the guy on the horse, that process of mashicha, that process of passing something from hand to hand, that physical transfer creates ownership in the person who is sitting on the animal. Now, I'd like to sort of add something to this Mishnah, kind of a personal note. So my daughter was listening to the Mishnah, and she asked me a good question, which is, are people in the Torah this greedy? It seems shocking that the first guy would want the item and the second guy would run and get it first. And of course, it's always best, in my humble opinion, not to personalize cases in the Mishnah. For instance, if you're learning Gittin al Tanai, so the question is, why would somebody be so creepy as to say, oh, I'll give you a get if you give me 200 shekel, and then the get becomes good. So I think the best sense when one's approaching Mishnah is not that they're trying to give necessarily practical cases, although no doubt sometimes people are this greedy, but to explore the nature of the law. That is, the Mishnah, Rebbe, provides cases and case law which allows us to explore the extent and the extent of the legal ruling and all aspects of the legal ruling. Not because we really expect people to go and jump the gun and grab something away from their friend, but we need to know what does happen in such a case so as best to understand the legal rules of possession and ownership. And that's why the Mishnah sometimes give cases which perhaps don't put human nature in the best possible light. And if people sometimes don't behave in the best possible light, that may be true, but we could always hope for the best.